Outlet Profile. You're listening to Premier Christian Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Profile here on Premier Christian Radio with me, Katie Stock. This programme is brought to you in association with the magazine that I write for, Premier Christianity. If you'd like a free sample copy of the latest issue, head to our website, premierchristianity.com/free sample. Today on The Profile, I'm speaking to church leader and author, Christy Wimber. Christy, welcome to the programme.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's so lovely having you here. I'd like to really start at the beginning and just ask you, what are your first childhood memories of faith?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I have glimpses and remembering early on in the Quaker church, because I came from the Quaker church. So I remember going to church, and I remember it was a real church that we would call, because so many churches, especially Vineyard churches and free churches, have a lot of warehouses. So the Quaker church is real church. What I mean by that is they had pews, and that they had these little chairs just for the children's ministry. So it goes way back for me that I remember times like that where we'd go to church.
And what do you remember in your home life about faith and the role of faith in your upbringing?
Yeah, I mean, it played an important part. My dad was great at it, and where he would kind of play a bit where, like, Sunday nights we'd go to church, and if we remembered what the sermon was about, then we'd get ice cream after church. So, you know, sort of like...
A good incentive.
Very good incentive. And the answer was always Jesus. Like, every week, Jesus, Jesus. It always worked.
And do you remember the kind of faith that your parents had?
Yeah, my parents are strong believers, always have been. And since I can remember, they got saved in the Quaker church as well. And so, yeah, they are believers and raised us as that.
And so you are married and married to Sean. Can you remember when you first met him?
Well, Sean and I actually grew up next door to each other. So I don't remember. Sean remembers me actually as a baby. That's kind of creepy. But he remembers me as a baby because of, again, being in the Quaker church, but also he's a bit older than I am. So he does remember me and growing up and everything. But I don't remember seeing Sean until, and really seeing Sean, you know what I mean? Yeah. It actually got my attention till I was older.
So did you play together when you were kids?
No.
Okay, so your parents, like...
He's 10 years older than me.
10 years older.
So yeah, it would have been, illegal.
He wasn't interested.
it wouldn't have been right.
He wasn't that interested.
No, and rightly so.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so how old were you when, he kind of caught your attention?
I was 19.
Okay.
Yeah, I was 19. And he had just gotten saved, and I had just actually come back to church, because I wasn't really going to church through my teen years. It was kind of like off and on, not really going. And but then, yeah, Sean got saved, came to church, we saw each other, and that was kind of really it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so how would you say your, like, relationship dynamic is? Because I think some different couples have different ways of doing things.
Yeah, I think because we've been married 28 years now, that might be wrong, because I'm the one that always gets it wrong. Who gets it right? It might be 29, actually. But his, I think it has changed throughout the years. Like, if I'd really think about our roles together in ministry, like, when we first got together, I said, if you go in the ministry, I'm gone. I do not want to be in the ministry. And I think I always had a fear of that's where I was headed. And I just did not want to do it because, although my parents, and role models and raised it, I saw a lot of things in the church in general where I was just not interested. And so I think when we started out, I was very anti all of that stuff. But I was involved with ministry because, of course, I married into a family that was, you know, the Vineyard. And so, you know, my family was a part where the Vineyard started. But as that grew, of course, I mean, I married into, you know, the family. So, and so that was always a part of it. So we worked in the ministry, but I wasn't really into it, to be honest with you.
But I would imagine you had a... In having John and Carol Wimber as your in-laws, a real model for what
marriage
within a ministry family looks like. Like, did they give you advice?
Yeah, I think so. I think throughout the years, they were very good at not forcing things on us. But I also think that they were good at, John was very, very good at putting us in the right place. And he was very strategic in that with us. And so I think he was just wise. And I knew, I felt like when it came to me, John actually knew what I was good at and what I did not want to be a part of. And so even when we would travel, our first trips over here in England, like with HTB and all those early trips in the vineyard, all the conferences, everything, that's what we did. And so, you know, we were a part of it, but I would be like the one that would be like, okay, I'm done now. I don't want to go out. And but he was very, didn't force, you know, like you have to be at this, you have to be at that. I think that was very helpful for me because I think that would have been a very big turnoff.
And I imagine partly the attraction, why Sean probably was attracted to you, in that you weren't wanting to marry into his family, if that makes sense.
I think so. I think probably he was more attracted to my sense of humor because I found everything funny, and I still do, actually. I find most everything really funny. And so he might have. I mean, there were several things, and I think it was just sort of an instant, you know, sort of connection. That was probably part of it.
Mm. Yeah. So, Chrissy, you've recently been through quite a difficult season in life. Do you want to just share a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I feel like the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 years have been quite difficult. And I'm still in it. So I keep waiting for, like, turning the corner. I was telling a friend of mine the other night. I keep turning around a corner thinking, okay, surely this is going to be over. But that's just not the season that I've been in, and some seasons last longer. I do believe that we serve a God of seasons, so I know that the difficulty type of things that we're going through hopefully will lift on some level. We've gone through many things in ministry, and then, you know, personally in life, in our family, and just things that I've gone through physically and my husband's gone through physically that have been quite serious. And so, and that's just after I did a book, you know what I mean? So it's sort of like, it's just definitely been a whole deal the last few years.
And how would you say that this period and the period that you're still in has changed your faith?
It's definitely changed my faith. It's challenged me in ways that actually I've never been challenged in before. That's why I don't believe you say, you know, I've been through the worst thing. No, because when you say that, usually the worst thing is waiting at the door. So, I hate to sound so down, but I just feel like this is life, this is battle. Plus, when you're in ministry, you know, at the end of the day, when you're in ministry, you're on the front lines. And so if you're doing anything productive, the enemy's going to do whatever he can to stop you. And so I think that it's challenged my faith in ways that that I didn't know that I was going to get challenged in, and other ways that I'm still getting challenged in, and I keep thinking, okay, this is going to change, right? And it hasn't changed yet. But definitely where my faith has been challenged in the area of hope. So, you know, faith, it's our faith that actually gets tested, right? But I don't think the world's looking at our faith. I think they're looking for hope. And so I think that's the thing that's really gotten challenged in me, is not losing hope in the midst of, you know, my faith. Like, I trust the Lord. I know the Lord's in control. I know that it's not over until it's over. But carrying hope and not losing hope in the midst of it, that's been a challenge for me.
Yeah, that is such a challenge, I think. And do you think that, I guess it's not a huge shift, but in some ways quite a, like a realignment, does that change how, as a pastor, you interact now with your church community when they're in the place of hopelessness?
I think so. And, I mean, one of my transitions is that, you know, with the church, that I made a massive transition with my church recently. So I think in walking that out, you know, they're watching how we handle this. They're watching how I respond, how I talk, how I'm living. They're watching all of those things. And so whether, you know, I'm preaching or whether we're going through something difficult, or they're watching all of it. So I think it's very important that that no matter where the stage is where I'm ministering, is that that's always in the back of my head, is that everybody's watching at some level.
Yeah.
You know?
And that can be a huge pressure, but also a great opportunity to live quite prophetically in a way. And
yeah.
Where just your very life is almost a prophetic act.
Yeah, well, it is actually. And you don't pick those things. I think those things pick you. And so my life has been very prophetic in so many different ways and pioneering in so many different ways. So I would think of myself as a pioneer because so many things that the Lord's had me do. And definitely prophetically. And to be honest with you, to have a prophetic type call is a lonely call because the prophetic is not always popular. When we think about the prophetic, we think of, oh, I want a word and I want to, yeah, that's the good side. That's the building up. That's the encouragement. That's the comfort. But the true prophetic of actually really calling things out is the word that actually calls us out of complacency. Mm-hmm. And so those things are tough and they're hard to hear. And oftentimes God will have me do that. And with my life, have me make decisions that I'm making that actually are prophetic, that, you know, are before its time a bit. So my church has done that. I've done that in the area of worship. I've done that again with my church. So I think that is part of the call that God's placed on me.
And that's a message that I saw you shared with the Pioneer Network here in the UK, kind of that challenge of not doing what is popular on the Christian scene, but kind of really digging down into what is God calling us to do right now, not what the church on the other side of town is doing, but what is God right here calling us to do. And that takes a level of bravery to kind of tune out the noise and really kind of set our eyes on him to get that focus, doesn't it?
I think so. And I think to be honest with you, I think through the years that grows, and I think especially what I've done in the recent times with church, I had so many messages, like unbelievable amount of messages from people say, Christy, that's so brave. You just so challenge me because it's so brave. But in my mind, I'm not thinking, hey, I'm going to be brave here. Like, nobody wants to pick that. And, a lot of times in that situation or the things that God calls us to do, they're not popular in the moment. It's almost like we... heroes, people that make a difference in life, they're not looked at as popular until later, till after it works. So a lot of times, I feel like I'm called to do things, and then people are like, kind of a bit nervous about it. And then they see, oh, wait a second, the Lord actually is on this. And I think over the years, I've built up an equity where now if I do something bigger, which is what I've just done, I have way more trust in the church as a whole. Because I've built all that equity throughout the years. Consistency builds equity. And so I think that I've been able to do that. Now, that doesn't mean that I hear perfectly. And that doesn't mean that what I'm going to do is going to be perfect. But I do feel like it builds into a confidence of, okay, well, this is what the Lord said, I believe, and I would rather risk that and than be right. And I would rather risk that than my reputation looking perfect. And I would rather, because I'd rather obey him. And so if I miss it, you know, then I'm learning another thing. But I think it does build into who I am and as an example to other people, which is important.
Yeah, that sounds like the kind of thing you might want kind of cross-stitched on your office wall or something. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Well, I have realized now because I've been in ministry so many years, I'm thinking this is probably my call. In a lot of different ways. So you kind of just have to, you know, surrender to it.
Yeah. You have referred to the fact that the modern church doesn't have, some parts of the modern church don't have a developed theology of suffering.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that in the last several years, probably, I don't know, 6-7 years, that I'm in so many different events and festivals and all kinds of different things. And it got to the point where I felt like I was going to different festivals and I just felt like it was a testimony, you know, deal instead of pulling out the word and actually really talking about life and what life really is. I'm all for the testimony, but if the testimony actually alienates other people that are really going through difficult stuff, I have, you know, a problem with how we do it, how we've handled it. And I felt like the last several years, how we've handled that has been poorly. Mm-hmm. And so in that, we've also eliminated the idea of suffering because suffering's not popular. And so, you know, it's sort of like we have to get to the point, like conferences, you know, life is not played out on a conference reel. Real life is hard and real life is painful at times. And real life is so difficult sometimes to even get out of bed in the morning, especially to show up and do ministry. I mean, you know what I mean? So I think the reality of understanding, I think God actually does his best work in us. I say this with much trepidation, but I think God does his best work with us when we are suffering in different ways.
Yeah. And when we look at scripture, that rings true, doesn't it?
Yeah. And so I have not seen it modeled very well, except in a couple places that I have a lot of relationship with, that I feel like, man, that they're really understanding the importance of recognizing our weaknesses, recognizing that we so fall short, and that this life is not perfect. This is not heaven, which is part of what I was seeing, whether there's no theology for suffering. And this is heaven. There's no theology for suffering. And so we actually leave out really everybody. It's not just a few. We leave out all of us in that, because we are going to go through difficult times. We are going to pray for people and not see them get healed. We are going to lose people that we love. And so the church is most powerful when we're ministering to what's in front of us, not the ideal idea of what we want to minister to.
And so the vineyard is has a real ministry of healing and the prophetic, amongst other things.
Yeah.
So where does this acknowledgement that this is not heaven, we get a glimpse of heaven now and what Jesus achieved on the cross and all of that victory. How do you think that fits in with healing ministry in particular?
Yeah, most definitely. I think it does. Well, the vineyard, I mean, I think for the vineyard, we actually land in a place with already the kingdom, the cross, and then the second coming of Christ. So we live in the already the kingdom of what Christ has done, but then the not yet of what's to come. And so I think I believe in the kingdom breaking in, which means we are looking for what the Father's doing. That's what Jesus modeled for us. And the kingdom breaks in, we recognize it, and then we bless it. We get behind it. Because if you get behind God, that's what works, right? Mm. And so I think for us in the vineyard and many other places, that is our theology. I think now with the internet and so many things, which is a good thing and also a thing that can be hurtful, is that everything is crossed over. That denominations are becoming less and less in lots of different ways, right? And people are getting fed from all kinds of different places. Like they're just watching whatever they're wanting to hear. And so with that, you have so many different theologies and you have so many different... So people, I don't think a lot, at the end of the day, a lot of people even know what they believe.
Yeah.
And so I think for us in the vineyard, we have this belief system of the already and the not yet. And I see it in many different places. And we could be wrong. So it's not like we actually are right. I just believe that in Scripture, suffering is such a major point that Jesus has used over and over and over again with all of his greatest leaders that he gives us models to, that they had to walk through. And if that was good enough for them, and that's what then that's obviously what we're going to be walking through. That's what Jesus gave us the blueprint for.
And it's not an either or. It's not either we have healing and God's glorified in that, or we have suffering. Because actually, God is also glorified in our suffering. Yeah. And when people die well,
I think I
don't think I've ever personally seen more kind of faithful discipleship than in watching friends die well.
Yeah. I love that I love that language, actually, Katie. Dying well is really, really important. And I think actually people around us, like if I pray for somebody and they get healed, they're going to be excited about it. And, I think it's great, you know. But to be honest with you, when I have lost people that I've loved, or what I have been through in the last 4 years, and what people that don't know the Lord watch me, that's actually what gets their attention. They're watching that. So the fact that I actually love Jesus and the fact that I'm actually persevering, trying to do my best through all of this, difficult things, I just think that the witness of that is really honestly what people can identify with. Because people can't identify with our strengths. They definitely cannot identify with our language in the church, but they identify with our humanity. And I think that's really important. And I think it's really important that God, like death is a part of life. And so teaching people, and this is what I believe. I believe as a leader, especially with a pastor hat on, my job is to teach people the kingdom and to teach people how to live well and give their life to that. But also my job is to teach people how to die well. And so there's times where I have to walk people through dying well. And doing that with your family and doing that with the people that you love and giving people a chance to grieve. If you have no theology for suffering, a lot of that is missing, and the damage is massive when there's no theology for suffering and there's no theology for hardship.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And did you just suddenly make this shift, or would you say that this shift has happened gradually as you, through your experiences? Or, you know, was there one moment you thought, oh, hang on, I've
with
got
the suffering.
Wrong.
Mm. Well, nobody's like, hey, I would really like to, you know. I mean, I think definitely, yeah, the Lord takes us on journeys in different areas. I'm kind of known in different things for, you know, have Christy come pray for the sick and all that. Great. If that's what God's doing, great. But I did get to a point where I just felt like, wait a second here, like, I'm not a showman. And what I'm doing, I don't want it to hurt the church. I want it to equip the church. And so definitely where the Lord is getting my attention in one way, by seeing things and walking through it personally. But then also, most definitely, I felt like the Lord was shifting me, brought different people into my life that have really shown me things that I've needed to see. And sometimes in that, I think God does this, where he brings people into our life that they just sort of hold a mirror up to you. And what you see is you're like, oh my gosh. And that happened to me. And so I think in the midst of that, when God does that, we have a choice to, you know, to run or to actually really look at it. And when I really looked at it, I realized, wait a second, some of this stuff is really unhealthy. This is not healthy. It's not healthy in me. It's not healthy in how I'm operating. I don't think it's healthy for my church. I don't think it's healthy for the church. And that, so definitely the Lord, but then also the Lord using other people. And that's really honestly what has shifted me more.
Hmm. That sounds quite like a mentoring relationship, would you say?
Yeah, we laugh about that because, yes, I would say, mentorship. I mean, I would call it mentorship. I'd call it sisterhood. I would call it just healthy relationship of having people in your life that are farther down the road than you, which is very important. And the important part is that I humble myself and say, wait a second here. See, I think it's really important that even if you have things in your life that are going really, really well, that you're actually willing to lay that stuff down and sit under somebody else's wisdom. And that's really honestly what I've been doing, is that, yeah, I've this done this, I do this, I love this, but let's put the brakes on some things here. And actually, I'm just going to sit under somebody else's wisdom here, and I'm going to learn some things that I need to learn that are outside of my world, outside of my comfort zone, most definitely, but has been very, very rich for me and grown me up in ways that I probably would not grow up otherwise. And it's been very, very, very good for me.
Wow.
Not easy, but good. And the other side of it, relationally, because I think God brings people into our life that it just goes to that level where they mentor you in different ways and speak into your life in different ways. But the thing that I feel like God's blessed me with is that I love these people, and these people love me. So I think that when love is involved in the relationship in a deeper way, then it even goes broader, and I think that's a gift from God.
Hmm. And so you were describing where you're kind of seeking the wisdom of those who have gone ahead of you.
Yeah.
I would imagine that because of your ministry and the name that you carry, you have a lot of people at the beginning of their ministry wanting wisdom from you to sit under, what do you say, your kind of canopy or umbrella, like, you know, learning from you. How do you work that out in a way that's not draining, that is in a healthy dynamic?
I mean, I obviously can't do everybody right, so but I definitely feel like there's different layers, and I'm actually stepping into more where I'm doing that on a deeper level, because I so believe in the local church. And so I want to actually do that more and more, where I'm training and I'm, you know, helping with church planting, and I'm doing more very intentional with all of this. So I have different layers where I'll meet people and I'll be like, okay, hey, you know, why don't you contact me? You get stuck, you have a question. Why don't you drop me a note and I'm happy to help you. Then I've got other things where I meet with different, you know, girls and kind of chat about where they're at, kind of help them get from A to B to C. So that I do that quite a bit. And then I do it on the other level with leaders, you know, and then I do it on another level with, you know, other big events and all that. So I'm very intentional with it. And then I just kind of see what those categories fall into. And then I'm just sort of shifting again right now anyways with training for church planting and raising up church plants. So I think that because I so believe in the local church.
Yeah.
So I'm making that a huge part of my life this next season.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's important.
And I imagine you have, I guess, the capital in order to be able to, I mean, like the kind of social capital to be able to affect that change that, and bring about that passion that you're respected and that people want to come and learn.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge privilege, isn't it? I think that gets built over time. And again, what you've done and what you built. And so I didn't go into anything building things thinking, oh, hey, I'm going to, you know, have a voice. But if you want a voice, you got to build something. So I think that's honestly what's happened. You know, mm-hmm. I've built things through the years. They, you know, God's blessed it in different ways. And so if I can help other people, especially, to be honest with you, what I didn't have is what I want to do for people in the next season. Because I just feel like I had no support system in so many different ways. Like people think, oh, Wimber, oh, Vineyard, you got... No, honestly, some of the time, it's a blessing and a curse. Because people think, oh, you got this, you can do this, you're, you know, and it's, and so they're hesitant to kind of help you. So I actually didn't have the support I needed. And I'm sure the Lord allowed all of that so that I could see what I wish I had so that I can give that to other people. And now it's very clear for me. No, actually, I want to give my life for that because I don't want other people to have to go through some of the things that I went through that I think are simple fixes. If I just had the wisdom and the knowledge back then, which I just didn't have.
Oh, Chrissy, that's so encouraging. Well, that brings us to the end of part one. So do join us again in a moment to hear more from Christy Wimber, and we will be right back.
It's 500 years since Martin Luther hammered home his message that kick-started the Protestant Revolution. In the October edition of Premier Christianity, we ask what exactly did the Reformation do for us, featuring leading voices on both sides of the debate, a dialogue between a Catholic and Protestant on trading places, and a look at the women who influenced the movement, plus interviews with Christy Wimber on why she chose to close her thriving charismatic church, the family who have instituted tech-free Sundays, and stories of faith behind the bars of an immigration removal centre. Ask for your free sample copy at premierchristianity.com/freesample.
The Profile. You're listening to Premier Christian Radio.
Hello and welcome back to The Profile here on Premier Christian Radio with me, Katie Stock. This programme is brought to you in association with the magazine I write for, Premier Christianity. If you'd like a free sample copy of the latest issue, head to our website, premierchristianity.com/freesample. And today on The Profile, I'm speaking to church leader and author Christy Wimber. Well, welcome back, Christy. A lot of people, you talked about this in the first half, but a lot of people don't know that the roots of the Vineyard are in the Quaker church, and that's the church that you grew up in. When you look at the movement today, are there traits of that heritage that you can still see?
Yeah, I definitely. Do the people know that those are the art? Probably not. That concerns me, because you have to know where you come from. I think that's very important. Plus, we're a young movement. But yeah, definitely Quaker values. And I just need to say, Quaker over here is in England is a bit different than Quaker in the States.
Okay.
So when I have said, you know, Quaker, sometimes people's eyes go really big. It is different than how
it is in the
States.
Do you want to explain those differences?
Well, I don't know all the differences, to be honest, except to say that I need to say that it's different.
Okay.
In the States, I know it's very healthy. It's not, it doesn't have any sort of weird, you know, kind of attachments to it in any way, cult or otherwise. I think that's very important to say. It's a very healthy movement. And I know the leaders quite well still, and hang out with them even. So they're just a really lovely, lovely movement. As in regards to what we have in the Vineyard, our roots are definitely Quaker roots. And so our care for the poor, which is a big thing for us in the Vineyard. Compassion Ministries is very important. In fact, you know, early on, John said, you know, if we don't care for the poor, we're in big trouble. We need the poor as much as the poor need us. Like that is a big call for us. That's so even me and my husband. Like, that's such a huge part of our life, huge part of how we did our church, huge part of how we minister. Caring for the poor is very important. And worship was foundational in the Quaker church. I didn't even learn that until a couple years ago when I was at the 100-year celebration, that worship was such a big part of it. And obviously for us, worship in the Vineyard has, you know, from our roots and how we started and what we were part of and all that. And several things, as in just how we were not really big on titles. That's really carried on into our movement where, you know, you can go around the world today and people don't really care so much about being called, you know, so-and-so, even pastor or whatever. Like, I had to get over a lot of those humps, even just in leading, so to speak, that, you know, being called a pastor is okay and being called, you know, certain things of what you're doing is all right. Especially in today's day and age when everything is, you know, apostle and prophet and all of that. So John was very much the, if you're doing it, then you're, then you know, then you got the title, and if you got the title, then you shouldn't have to tell everybody you have the title, you know.
Yeah.
So I see that all across the world, actually. That is definitely a part of our Quaker roots.
Do you think the kind of Quaker tradition of being having the freedom to share what you think God is telling you, and having the freedom that everyone will listen to that? To me, that sounds very much like the Vineyard, where what you hear from God isn't mediated through your church leaders. There's a not a total free-for-all, but there is in some respects, and that space is created for individual gifts and hearing God's word.
Yeah, I mean, the Quakers were called the Quakers because they quaked, like the Holy Spirit came on them. A lot of Quakers don't know that. A lot of Vineyards don't know that. But that is the foundation of the Quaker movement as well. Hearing God and actually going for it. I think that probably the language is a bit different. I don't think we even really knew that those were Quaker things, because we were actually kind of blessed out of the Quaker movement for, you know, moving in the gifts and the Holy Spirit. We were blessed back in a few years ago, which was quite remarkable. It was a beautiful ceremony. But I think hearing God and following God and all of those things, I never knew those were Quaker things, actually. I always thought of that as being taught that that was a normal way of your Christian walk, and you don't have to go through somebody else. You can just go to Jesus yourself.
Yeah.
So I grew up on that.
Yeah, and your eyes lit up when you said how, you know, you'd been hearing about the roots of the Vineyard,
yeah,
and how you almost seeming concerned that a lot of people aren't aware of their heritage.
Yeah.
Do you think that that's slightly an age thing, that as you grow older, you care more about where you've come from?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I think I've always had that, because my father-in-law has been gone for 20 years this year. That's a long time, actually. And when he died is when we actually, I was like, we've got to make this all of our stuff. We've got to care for our heritage. We've got to make sure that all of the generations follow. We've got to plan for at least a couple hundred years. So I was doing that then. So I think that's always been in me, where we've got to plan, we've got to care for, we've got to protect. I think that that's very important. I think you've got to plan that, you know, far in advance, and preach that way and sow that way and give that way. So it's important to me that people understand what they're a part of and where they come from. Because if God's called you into a certain movement, you want to know why God's anointed that movement, because that's where you'll be blessed. That's where the anointing is going to be. So I think that's very important that we operate in that way, because we paid a high price to actually leave what we were already in. Mm. So it's important to me.
Yeah. So Chrissy, you planted and led the Yorba Linda Vineyard. Mm-hmm. I hope I said that right.
Yeah,
that?
You did. Good. Actually. Very, very well.
And that was a church in the same city that the Vineyard was originally, yes, founded.
Yes.
But that church has since closed, so you've closed the church. Can you explain to me a bit
what
about that, what you did,
yeah,
and why and all of that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so, I mean, it was a massive transition. So this is when we speak a little bit about prophetically, about this is where I was like, oh, this one I don't want to do. It was very difficult. It's one thing to actually close or change something that's not working, or, you know, but that's not the case here. The case here that we were in massive transition again. And for over 2 years, we were looking for somebody to come take the church. We could not find anybody. And I had taken on working with Vineyard US, helping with church planting. And I was like, why is it that we actually don't have a bullpen, which we call that in church planting, for other people to come in it to actually take churches over? we don't have that, but we're planting 750 new churches. So my brain's like going, you know, like we've got to build this because this is what we need. So I'm walking through all of this. And at the same time, we can't find anybody to take the church. And the Lord had spoken to me and said, your assignment here is done. And so I knew that that was, but I also knew that it was very important that I did not leave before I was done. And so, or I knew it was important that I didn't leave before I was done, but also how I finished, I needed to finish really, really well. Because as a pioneering church, it's made a massive difference in the city. I mean, our outreaches and all that, we had 26 outreaches going. I mean, it's an organization within an organization. And, but the Lord made it really clear to me that we were going to have a massive transition. And I kept thinking, well, of course the Lord's going to bring somebody in. Of course the Lord's going to bring somebody in. And we just could not find anybody. And at the same time, we had gone through a massive transition where in the States, it's kind of really crazy, but we got into this building, put $250,000 into it, got everything set up. And the week after we got in, the landlord tried to evict us because we redid everything. So we were leasing to buy. And just in the States, you can actually sue and try to, you know, kind of do those kind of things. And you have to defend yourself, right or wrong. You have to defend every accusation. And I had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of accusations. I think I had 10 lawsuits. So all I was doing was defending myself and defending the church. And I'd come back into town, and that's all I was doing. I was like, this is not what I've been called to do. This is not what we're called to do. Who cares about a building? It was just a nightmare. And so it was one of those things that I will never understand, actually. It was so unjust. I was doing what I was doing for free for the city. I built so many different things. And there was so much just opposition. And winning the lawsuits was nothing because she wasn't going to stop. And so I just had to walk through this whole thing of trusting the Lord and asking the Lord what to do. And so we made this massive shift and got out of it and just rebuilding. At the same time, kind of looking for another building that we could not find. So I was looking for another building, couldn't find anything. My husband started getting quite ill with his back, started getting digressing quickly. So I knew that actually us getting another building, which would be our 9th building, if not 10th, in 11 years, he could not really be a part of. And we made a decision going into this, like, this is a family deal. This is not. And I'm like, Lord, if you're not going to give us a place, I don't know what to do. Because if we keep doing what we're doing, I know that this is not you. Like, we completely shifted the day. We completely shifted how we were functioning. And it was just not us. And so I knew that we were at this transition phase. But I felt like the Lord said, I will tell you. I will tell you. I will tell you. So that was a 2-year deal. But my husband digressing wasn't until the last 6 months. And so I was out of the country. I was actually at Spring Harvest. And the Lord spoke to me really clear. I felt like the Lord was very clear and said, this is what I want you to do. I want you to hold a celebration. I want you to celebrate what I've done the last 11 years. I want this to be a thing that is honoring everything that the people put their hands to, and then I blessed, and how many people got saved or delivered or came to the Lord or got fed, cared for, whatever. And I want it to be a celebration. And this transition will be a model for leaders where they actually need to learn how to finish well when their assignment is done. And that, I just want you to know that this is me. And told me some other things in particular. So I was very clear on it. I was like, I don't get this. I don't understand this. This is not what I want to do, but I do feel like this is the Lord. So this is one of those prophetic things like what we're talking about, where hearing that, but then also walking it out and realizing if I do this, I have this whole church here of people that have been so faithful and that are going to have to be on board here. So I went home. I met with my board. You know, it was emotional, but they all said, we really feel like this is the Lord. Because at that time is when my husband started really digressing physically. That this is the Lord. You've got all these other hats. You know, this is not a time for your family for this. And we really feel like the Lord's not opening any other doors. And so at the same time, I felt like the Lord said to me, if you stay and if you do this, I will bless it, but it won't be my best for you right now. And that was kind of even harder because I thought, like, Lord, like, that makes it even harder because, you know what I'm saying? I'm having to walk through. Yeah.
And what a father-like thing to say. That's what we say
it's
to
very,
our children,
very loving,
isn't it?
Yeah. And because my heart is there, you know, and those people, and I love them. Even though I knew I was done, I love these people. I've shepherded these people, quite a few of them, for a long time. So told my board, told all that. Then I had to gather all of my leaders, this massive group of people. And I just said, you guys, and I broke down what I said. And everybody just started, there were just tears. I mean, there was all of this, but it was phenomenal. So I'm just going to say, probably never going to be able to walk through something what I saw that night. And what I saw was, as a leader, which you rarely get, is that one after another person just kept going around saying, Christy, this is where I got saved. This is where I got healed. This is where I got delivered. Other people saying, now we know what to do. Like, you've taught us what we're to do. Like, we're fine. This is the Lord. Like, we don't understand it, but we trust you, and we know that this is probably the Lord. So you cannot get that many leaders on the board at the same time and the Lord coming in so much power. So we got in this massive circle, held hands, just sang and worshiped and thanked the Lord for our church. It was beautiful. And it was just one of those things where I just felt like, this is actually healthy. Like, this is healthy. Me actually trying to keep doing something that's kind of wearing me out, that I'm getting, you know, that the Lord is changing my season, is not healthy. So I feel like walking that out, getting lots of counsel in the meantime, you have to understand this, lots of counsel, is that it was just beautiful. And then we held a massive celebration. So I thought, it wasn't until like the day of the celebration that I thought, okay, I could be really wrong here. Because, one, this is my reputation on the line. Like, if this is not the Lord, I'm going to know today. Because it wasn't just all the leaders. It was all the people in our church. So we did all of these things of visiting all the groups and getting to all of the church before we did the final celebration, so everybody heard it. So kind of, you do it well. And the celebration was just phenomenal. Like, I had a friend of mine come in and do it for me. And we celebrated the church, and we celebrated what God's done, and they honored us and our family. They prayed for all of our family and our kids and everything, and it gave them a chance to thank us, and it gave us a chance to thank them. And we just thanked the Lord for what he did all those years. It was beautiful.
Wow. And that's such the opposite of what we see so often in church leadership, because church leadership is power.
Yeah.
And as humans, we have a lust for power that we see in ourselves and try and give to God, you know. But often, I think leaders, because they're human, try and grip hold on to it, and that means that they don't leave well because they leave after they should have. What a lesson and an example for other leaders when they know it's not quite the right time. What I also really love about that is that we think all the circumstances need to be absolutely right.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's not the case.
You pray for the obvious, and when that doesn't happen, then you have to shift how you pray. And that's really what I did. I mean, obviously we kept groups going because you have to transition, and people are dying, and, you know, all kinds of things are going on with families. So we kept groups going, and I said, listen, give me a couple months, let me pray. The Lord said he'll speak to me. So we've done that, we've gone through that. The Lord has shown me I'm probably going to, you know, plant some more churches and do all of that. So that's great, but I needed to walk that out well, and it's been obvious that it's been the Lord. But walking through it was not easy, and that was very, very high risk.
And did you speak to other local church leaders about pastoral oversight?
I had several leaders in the city come and ask for my church. Yeah. I've never had anybody come and ask for my church like that. But they weren't in the vineyard, and it would not have been fair to the people that I'm pastoring. So it wasn't right. Like other denominations, you know, you send somebody in to take over the church, and whether they're fit or not. And I really believe that God calls us to a place. And that's how we operate in the vineyard. So I just thought that would actually be unfair to the people.
Yeah.
But I did have several pastors ask me for my church. So interesting.
Over a coffee, polite conversation.
No, that's what happened. Yeah. It was very, very interesting.
Great.
Very interesting time.
Well, Chrissy, you've written a book called Transformed. Where did the basis of this book come from?
Well, I mean, it had been many years in the, you know, kind of thinking about it, being approached many, many years ago, and just not really wanting to do it, to tell you the truth. But the Lord, again, just shifted me, said, this is time, and started speaking to me about certain things. And then one day just sort of laid out Romans 12 for me, which is one of my favorites, but laid it out to me in a way that I had not seen before. And once I began writing, I realized this is actually touching on so many things that I'm seeing around the world today in the church, and so many struggles that people walk through. And I just didn't realize that. And so when I began writing, it just began to hit all of those things, and it just began to unfold. So it was definitely an organic thing of writing that was just, again, I think prophetically in different ways. Yeah.
And that's how you knew it was the right time, despite being asked to.
Yeah, because I didn't want to do it. So once I knew that it was the Lord and I kind of surrendered to it, it just all just, you know, started coming out.
Yeah, yeah. I know that you've got some quite strong opinions about social media, and you kind of alluded to them earlier. Tell me about these. Are you on social media? What are your thoughts on
it? I am on social media. I love social media. It's not that I don't love social media. I love it and I hate it. Because I love it that the world is small. So many people I love dearly are around the world. You know, it's one of the hardships of what I do is that I don't live by people that I'm very close with. And so I love that aspect of it. I love the aspect of being able to learn and be informed in different ways that we couldn't before. Like, I love all of that. I love being able to see what God's doing in different places around the world. But just as anything that's great, it can also be something that's a stumbling block. And so I think in the culture, what it's fed is that definitely, especially with the church, that it's fed celebrity culture, and it's fed the idea that, you know, that you actually don't have to go to church. You can actually just read church. And so that, I think it's crippled us in ways as the church. And those are the things that I have a problem with it. It's not, and I think it's more actually of the glamorizing, where it does, you know, people kind of see somebody's life and seem, you know, think that it's perfect because they only post the highlights of their life. And so those are the things that bother me. But the other side of it is it's a great way to keep in touch with your friends around the world and, yeah, you know, things like that. So, yeah.
And encouraging, you know, Christians in, yeah, who are quite isolated as well.
That's another thing that's
really
great about it. Yeah.
Incredible thing.
Yeah, it's like anything else, isn't it? It's sort of like there's some negatives and there's some positives. Mm. So that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, yeah. That seems pretty balanced, yeah, balanced to me.
Yeah.
You've said that there's a struggle in maintaining what God has anointed the vineyard for. What do you mean by that?
That there's a struggle in that? Well, I don't think it's just in the vineyard. I think it's just everywhere. I think it's more as in, I think the enemy will always go after what God's called you to. The enemy's always going to try to shut down what has the most potential to change you and what has the most potential to change the people around you. That's just the reality of life. The enemy is always going to go after that in you. And so that is what I would call what you're anointed for, what you're gifted for, what you're called to. And so I think to maintain that, you have to be on it. Because I think that the enemy will always try to shut that down. So I think that's not a vineyard thing. I think that's just a believer kingdom thing.
And when you think about, previously we were talking about the history of the vineyard. What are the kind of key aspects of the history and the heritage that you have that you think are integral to your DNA rather than just of the time that you are really keen to continue?
You know, to be honest with you, that I want to continue. So this, to be honest with you, I do not think of myself as a vineyard person. I think of myself as a kingdom person. So, and I'm in so many different movements around the world now. So have been for so long that I will put a vineyard hat on, but I put on lots of different hats and I just think of church. Like, I love the church. And so I think some of those things are so ingrained in me, as in who I am and how I operate and how I minister and how I do things, because that's how I was raised and that's how I was trained and all those things.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully, like I said, with the other relationships that I'm growing in different areas that I wouldn't grow otherwise. I think for me, as in what I think are valuable, are the things that that I think are important to follow the Holy Spirit and what God's saying, and let God lead you and trust that, and don't overthink things. Take lots of risk, fail all the time. I think those are good values, actually. I think it's getting an education. I'm not talking about morally, of course. I'm talking about just taking lots of risks. And I think that in ministry, I think that in life, I think that's really important. And I think the balance of the Word and the Spirit is very important. Like, that is, I think we've tended to go one or two ways drastically. I don't think that's healthy. But what I would actually like to see with the Vineyard is that I was, you know, brought up in, that was very important, is that it was the whole church. And I would like to see the Vineyard get more involved with the whole church again, and not just talk about or do the kingdom advancing through the Vineyard, but that the mindset, the kingdom advancing through the church.
Yeah.
Because that is our value, and that's what I would like to see more of around the world.
Yeah. And I know the Vineyard in the UK, that's a real value of theirs. And when I've been at new wine events, yeah, they've just said, you know, the Vineyard, we love you guys. And, yeah, and it's not, God has placed us in these places, but yeah, it's not at the expense of you guys. God is doing something great as well. And I think that just so demonstrates the gospel in that moment, doesn't it?
And if I think about Vineyard, to be honest with you, especially when I'm over here, I think of HTB, I think of New Wine, I think of Soul Survivor, I think of the Anglican Church, especially the C of E. I think of all of that as our family, very much so. Mm-hmm. The Catholic Charismatic. I could just go on and on. But those places are very, very important to us, especially New Wine in the Anglican Church and HTB. I would think that's actually my family. So this is us together. This is us advancing the gospel together. So I love that mindset, that thinking, that planning, that building.
Yeah, how encouraging. Mm. Chrissy, thank you so much
for
coming in. And thank you so much for listening to The Profile. And it's been with me, Katie Stock, and Christy Wimber. You can listen back online at premierchristianity.com/The Profile. You can also download the podcast. Join us again the same time next week. Coming up next is Dave Rose with Premier Playback.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. LeafHome.com/water.